council and the police, you know, very quickly.
Okay, noted. Right, thank you for that. Moving on to Thames Fund, to speak to this.
I guess me again. Councillor Mia expressed some disappointment in what he sees in Loughborough at the moment. I invite you to go around the country and take a look at a lot of other town centres. It is clearly the case that high streets up and down the country are struggling. My judgment is that actually Loughborough is not doing that badly. Yes, there are pockets of deprivation, pockets of vacancies, persistent vacancies. But in the grand scheme of things, Loughborough is doing rather well, in my opinion. And the vacancy floor space for Loughborough is running at about, I think it's about 12%, which is below the national average that we find. But the inescapable fact is that town centres throughout the country are struggling to justify their economic position at the heart of the communities they serve. The government has recognised this through a series of initiatives. Last year, there was the Future High Streets Fund was announced. We did bid into that process, but we were unfortunately unsuccessful. This marks the Towns Fund marks a new initiative, and the headline effectively is that we're in this race. There were 101 named town centres who are eligible to bid into this programme, and Loughborough is named as one of those. The overall budget is £3.6 billion. A successful place could draw down, and I'm very cautious about this, but you could draw down £25 million to one particular place. This paper then seems to set out the process that we need to participate in order to get access to the town's fund. It's a fairly technical report because it's paraphrasing the prospectus which the government has published. But the headline pointers for it are that we needed to submit what was peculiarly called a statement of readiness by the 19th of December. That statement of readiness was effectively a summary of what we've been doing. So all of the policies and strategies that we have, the centre master plan is a key component of that, but as is the local plan, a whole range of other plans, policies, documents. The various partnerships that we already have up and running, and it was effectively a question of, are we ready, is Loughborough ready to take on the challenge of a town deal bid? The short answer to that is no, it's not. But that's not shameful in any way. It helps us in identifying where the gaps are that we need to plug, working with partners to plug those gaps to ensure that we have a fully functioning town board, which is enabled then to commission the preparation of an investment plan for the whole of the town. And that investment plan becomes the basis for which we can then bid for government money. So I share Councillor Mears' frustrations earlier that in some respects what we can do is limited by the funding available. I would give my eye teeth to work in Leicester for about a year or two, I think. Mm-hmm. But we simply don't have those level of resources. But if we can successfully bid into the town deal, then we may well draw down that sort of funding to help deliver and expedite the delivery of our town centre master plan. So we're on track. We have made the submission on the 19th of December, as was required. The next step will see the formation of the board, town deal board, before the end of January, and steps are being taken towards assembling that board along the line of the guidance the guidance contained in the prospectus as to which organisations need to be represented on the board. The first task of the board will then be to work on the preparation of this investment plan for the whole town. I should emphasise it's not just the town centre. the area defined by the town deal is effectively the geographical urban area of Loughborough. So it embraces wider aspects of what makes Loughborough a successful urban area. So that investment plan needs to be prepared before the end of the summer. And then on the basis of that investment plan, we will be then making bids or putting together business cases to bid for government funding for projects which emerge from the investment plan. Thank you, Chair.
Right. I'm aware that we've got a full agenda, so questions I prefer to be largely based on process at this stage and rather than kind of proposals of spending money we don't yet have. So I think my first thing, Councillor Bolton.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I just want to start with the process that you've outlined with the Town Board and convening the Town Board, and then we can probably take up later the membership of the committee. You said in the prospectus of who should be on that Town Board, can you give us an idea of what that thought process is? You know, who do you think is likely? Is it people represented from the BID, from council management, from cabinet? How's that going to be made up of?
There are some groups which are specifically defined as to have to be members of the board. Thanks, yeah. So Leicestershire County Council is a neighbouring authority, Member of Parliament, local business investors, the Local Enterprise Partnership, and communities. That's an interesting one, communities, but that's something we're working with the communities and partnerships to identify how we effectively integrate communities into the board. It goes on then to set a range of potential interests. Business improvement districts, I think it's essential, in my view, that the BID is represented on this. Job Centre Plus, anchor institutions, the universities, the colleges. I think the universities and colleges, again, are going to have to be members of this because part of the remit is looking at skills, developing skill sets to support economic growth. Arm's length bodies from government departments and other private investors and developers. So there's a very broad range there. Now, the actual composition of the board has yet to be finally agreed, but it will be guided by the guidance in the prospectus.
And will you share that final list? Not the people who run it, but
we have to publish that along with the terms of reference and the operating procedures for the board.
Councillor Bolton and Councillor Draco.
Thank you, Chair. Forgive me if I've missed this or misread it, but I believe that last week 14 councils were selected as pilots in this scheme, of which Loughborough was not one. So my question is, when will we know if we're part of the what I refer to here as the extended pilot?
Councillor Morgan kindly mentioned it, but sometimes this was the first day back. For me, it was one of those. I read that article this morning.
Right.
And my interpretation of that is that there are 20 towns named as part of the Future High Streets mm-hmm. programme, and that 14 of those have been selected the task force to help them develop the programme. What I am not clear on is the degree to which the Future High Streets programme and the Town Fund overlap and integrate.
They are separate.
Okay.
So that's helpful, thank you. So effectively then, the ones you have seen are ploughing their own furrow. They will be getting the advice and guidance from the government's task force on how to develop a successful bid into the Future High Streets programme. We'll be working on how to get a successful bid into the town's fund.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Draycott.
Yes, Chair. We've heard tonight about all of the good things that we do in Charnwood to make town centre attractive and to bring people in, the fair and the market and all the other big events that we have. So on face of it, this sounds all really good, but the elephant in the room, surely, is online shopping, and that's not going to stop. That's going to continue, and I'm as guilty as most people are of using it. So what's the vision then? Is that the work that's going to be done about how a town centre or a city centre is going to look in the year 2030 or 35 or what have you? Because it's going to be completely different. It has to be different. We can't keep the same because it's no longer working. So is this board then going to sit down with like a blank sheet of paper and going to draw up this vision and then work towards it? Is that how it's going to be done?
I don't think it'll be a blank sheet of paper, but essentially yes, the key point is that the board will have to define the vision for Loughborough. But it's already, we already have got visions that emerge from the local plan, the core strategy, and the town centre master plan.
Yeah.
All of those visions do acknowledge that the world has changed and that you cannot put the genie back in the bottle. So, and the whole tenor of the whole range of government advice is that the high street as we knew it has gone. But it's about finding a new role, a new function, a new purpose for the high street, and integrating a broader range of uses which will complement those activities and uses which will remain part of the high street. Certainly the high street that we will see in 10, 20 years' time is very different from the one that we grew up with.
Okay. And just finally, Chair, I think the board is going to be too big.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
based on everybody that's been mentioned to be included, because you know what it is with a committee, how difficult it is to kind of get, you know, the work done and agreement. Yeah. You have this lot sitting in a massive room, so somehow it's got to be streamlined, and an executive, or they're going to have to commission projects to look at this vision. Yeah. I know that's still to be done, but it does seem to be a massive project here.
We're certainly working on those structures at the moment. It's likely that we'd want to use existing structures as much as we can, and then use delegates from those to the board,
sit on it,
so that we can at once gather their intelligence, but also delegate some of the activities which flow from the board into groups who are already in existence and already doing good work. So, fair point. I'm sure there are others listening around the table. We'll listen very carefully what you have to say about getting the number right.
Yeah, thank you, Chair.
Councillor Parkinson.
Part of the board's work will be
the university.
Okay. Right.
Part of the board's work, of course, will be guided by the public, and in the prospectus it talks about how towns are expected to engage with communities. David, when can we expect the My Town campaign to reach the council, and then from there go live for the public to interact with?
I think the My Town programme is already running at a national level.
Right.
We have a meeting on Wednesday with Mike Roberts, looking at how we how Charnwood gears itself to either dovetail into that or complement that the My Town community engagement programme.
So you're meeting on Wednesday, and then approximately when would we be looking to roll it out in the media? To
I can't answer. All I can say is that this is all happening as we speak, almost.
Yeah,
so it is in progress, and we will have to have that will have to be operational by the end of January, along with the board.
Yeah. Okay. And obviously the board will monitor the feedback that's coming through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. So we're aware that partly this is a report to the policies, and then there's also members to make nominations for member reference group. So the mechanism for that will be, Councillor Merritt, what do you speak?
It's asked to be noted, and then the second is that we should make nominations per member per ward. One member per ward, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So I say that whenever the board is, this member reference board is ready, you just ask nominations from the group leaders, and we'll nominate accordingly. And where we've got a split group, we can come to an agreement, or if there's an independent person in the group, we can come to an agreement as to which member represents that particular ward. Is that okay?
That's fine, just as a heads up that this there was going to be a member reference group, and, yeah. and you're aware that we can certainly trigger that.
Yeah.
When the time is okay.
Having clarification of the mechanism, I think that's everything, so thanks for that. So we can move on to item 8, which is the draft of Charlie local plan.
Claire Clark, Group Leader for Plans, Policies and Placemaking. The purpose of the report, this was a request from the committee to enable members of the committee to be consulted on the draft local plan. I'm sure members are aware that the council had been out for consultation in November and December. Consultation ended on the 16th of December, but following a delay to this meeting, which was originally due to happen towards the end of that consultation period, we agreed that we would allow the committee the opportunity to make comments in the new year to accommodate the change. So by way of background, just very briefly, the existing adopted local plan is the core strategy and the safe policies from the Borough of Charnwood local plan. And the government requires us to review local plans every 5 years and consider whether there's been a change in the evidence or the context for the plan. And changes in the local housing need evidence for the borough make it absolutely necessary for us to review the local plan and update the core strategy. The standard methodology, which the government introduced in 2018 and then revised in 2019, identifies a need for 1,082 homes a year in Charnwood. And we are currently only planning for 820 through the core strategy. So the draft plan is being prepared. There's been two consultations already. It's supported by a large range of evidence base and a sustainability appraisal, and it provides both strategic and detailed policies, and the aim is that we'll replace both the core strategy and those old Borough of Charnwood local plan policies. It's been informed by an assessment of a range of options. And it presents the council's preferred option for the scale of growth, the distribution of homes, and then actual sites for new homes. But it also provides a range of draft policies on a huge number of topics, primarily around housing, employment, retail, regeneration, the environment and climate change. So the paper requests that members of the committee consider the draft local plan and provide your responses through to us in the local plans team. Happy to take any comments or questions.
Any questions, Councillor Draco?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the report. I have submitted comments via the website regarding the consultation, but I'd just like to raise one thing, and it may relate better to the master plan document, but the discussion was quite lengthy regarding that, so I didn't get the opportunity. During the elections, it's come home again, and it's something that has occurred to me in the past, and it keeps get left and it comes back and then things move on. But there's a clear democratic deficit in regards to the large number of properties we have that have got security doors, in that you cannot access them, not just at election time, but the whole of the year. You know, as a ward councillor, if I want to give out a newsletter or get inside the building to hand deliver a letter, and this isn't mainly council properties, this is mainly private properties, and there's more and more of these being built. So some occasionally have letterboxes outside, which is great. The postman must cheer every time, or the postwoman must cheer every time, right? Is there any way that as a council we can say to planners more, you know, can you put these letterboxes outside to be available? Because it's not just, you know, the council, there must be other agencies and police and what have you who would like to contact residents about something, could be health issues or what have you. So it's a question really, is there anything that we could start that would draw attention to developers to start thinking along these lines, because there is so many people out there just shut away behind security doors, and certainly when it comes to elections and that, just not involved, just not contacted and what have you. You know, a few might not actually want to, but I don't think that's actually healthy. So just throw that question in, Chair.
Through you, Chair, Richard Bennett, Head of Planning and Regeneration. I'm not aware of any rules that we can rely on to regulate for that kind of thing, Councillor Draycott, I'm afraid, but it's perhaps something that the committee might want to take forward and maybe put to other agencies who may have some guidance on it. It's not a really a planning matter.
Okay.
Councillor Parsons.
I have two issues unrelated, if you will indulge me, Chair. The first is regarding HMOs. Can I just clarify, first of all, will the new strategy, the new local plan, supersede the supplementary planning guidance of December 17?
It will when it's adopted.
Okay. I'm interested to see the evidence as to the removal of the second half of Clause 411 from residents living in high concentration areas. I speak as someone who lives there and who has sought the views of residents who live in high concentration HMO areas. If I can quote the paragraph which is now missing in this document regarding HMOs, the piece that's now been taken out says, equally, there will be instances where the impacts of a new HMO in an area with an already high concentration might be considered acceptable in accordance with policy CS4 and planning permission granted accordingly. I am interested to see the evidence specifically from residents living in very high concentration areas who've requested that to be removed from the core strategy, because we're always asked for evidence of these issues. So I'd be very keen to see the evidence for the removal of that clause in the core strategy. That's my first question. I'm happy to take the answer now, we'll deal with the second issue.
What page is that, Councillor Parsons?
It's page 50, is the area where it would be, it to be there. It's on page 20 of the Supplementary Planning Guidance, December 2017, which I know a number of councillors in this room worked very hard in those wards where there are very high concentrations of HMOs already, and some residents in some distress because of the circumstances they find themselves in.
Thank you, Mr. Redford.
Yeah, through you, Chair. So the paragraphs, just off the top of my head, and I'd probably like to think about it a little bit more after the meeting, if that's okay, but paragraph 5.56 in the draft local plan, we talk about threshold being something that we need to strike a balance on. So the threshold shouldn't be absolute, and that's the point of that paragraph that you quoted from the housing SPD, which is that because it's 21% or because it was 19% shouldn't be the determining factor. It's one of the factors.
I think we're talking about places where it's 80% and
70%. Yeah, no, absolutely. So we do make that continues to be the approach, that threshold is part of the story.
I personally don't think that phrase is strong enough or makes that point to residents in areas like that, and I would very strongly recommend that's looked at, and I can produce a vast number of local residents who will happily walk in the door and make the point that clause as it's been rewritten wouldn't suit, and they wouldn't be comfortable having worked very hard to get 4.11 second part of the paragraph in supplementary guidance 17 in there. So I would be very interested for that discussion to be had with those residents or whomsoever you feel that should be with. But this is our chance on this committee to be consulted, and I think that needs to be taken forward. I won't be happy at all if that's just left hanging and just goes away, because I don't think it's suitable. People worked very hard in 2017. And those residents haven't seen any change in their circumstances, and as far as I'm aware, the clause hasn't been used once in any case where a number have been brought forward.
No, and that, through you, Chair, that's very much part of the issue, and perhaps it's probably fundamental in why it's not repeated in this document, is whether or not it was actually something that was was difficult to implement in reality. So in reality, when we got applications in front of us in very high concentration areas, we've never had an occasion where we've been able to say yes. And so actually, whether or not we know, we've been testing that that idea through planning applications using the guidance that we've had in the housing SDD. But we've never had that circumstance.
I'd like to note to see something done in this consultation period that we have for that to be considered before the final document is produced.
Yeah, absolutely.
An issue around the wording as it currently is, as opposed to that which is in the subject plans December 17.
Thank you.
Through you, Chair, that one I will look for that to come back to me, this committee, you, for action, not to be left hanging. Second question is around, I guess I have to declare a vested interest as the councillor for Nanpantan, but around Nanpantan and the overall housing situation. I think we need to have a slightly more honest dialogue with residents in that ward. And if I could explain the situation, we see in the new core strategy, Nanpantan Grange, which residents thought was dead in 2009, as a suggested 544 housing development, Leconfield, Snell's Look, another small development. Residents in that part of the world have seen the university expand, the science park, as recently as December, land west of Snell's Look Lane planning permission granted. And I'm desperately keen to catch up with individuals to find out what the background to that change of heart was. And we see, as I say, in this local plan, suggested local plan, effectively the lifestyle of all of those residents curtailed, basically being surrounded on all sides now with what's being put forward in this local plan. I truly say that residents of Nanpantan are not NIMBYs in any way and have dealt with a huge amount of development around them. The key issue, I think, on a number of instances is the infrastructure. The only part of the Leicestershire transport impact assessment I agree with from the land west of Snell's Look Lane is the massive, huge percentage increase in queues that will occur at the Priory, which 544 houses at Nanpantan Grange is probably not going to help. So I think this local plan needs to come very clean and be very upfront with residents in Nanpantan who are not NIMBY-ish, but who need to know in a very clear way, because I guarantee that all of them will have read this document, unfortunately. And you can say that's their fault, but I believe that's our responsibility to represent, and that's what we're here to do. I believe that they need to know that they are going to be completely and utterly surrounded. The public sector, I fear, will be left with the price of picking up the infrastructure issues, because I don't see the infrastructure, certainly not in the first piece of land west of Snell's Look Lane. I don't see the Priory Crossroads being adapted to cope with the traffic impact assessment. And whilst residents here might feel I'm being parochial with my ward, trust me, this is a main access, main gateway to this town, the university, the science park, land west of Snell's Look Lane, or in other words, the other extension of the science park, this housing development and everything which is surrounding it. Park that with our carbon issues and the incinerator on the other side of the road at Shepshed and our view of having better air quality, a more sustainable environment. One can assume the residents of Nanpantan are not being NIMBY-ish, but are somewhat concerned in my view. And whilst I retain an open mind to be persuaded on all these issues, I think we need to become very clear and plain and forthright with those residents communally around what they are confronted with over the next 10 years.
Well, that's your turn.
Richard Bennett, Head of Planning and Regeneration. If I could just respond to some of those points through you, Chair. Yes, you're quite right. It is important that residents of the Nanpantan area and Charnwood overall are engaged in the local plan process, and this is why we've gone out with a draft plan, and you know there will be more consultation in the process towards finalising the plan down the line. But I do feel I need to comment on some of the points you made about the Priory Crossroads and the development west of Snell's Look Lane. That development is one which was taken forward through the core strategy, which has been through a formal testing process of examination of the public and has been adopted by members of this council. So it is our strategy for delivering growth in Loughborough and the borough to 2028. The planning application which members received, just trying to think now, before Christmas, I think it was. Or was it?
Yes.
I think it was, yes, sorry. Time flies when you're having fun. That application included analysis of the transport impacts of that development west of Snell's North Lane, and the evidence put forward there satisfied the Highway Authority, who are our advisers, that that scheme can be accommodated in the transport network with the proposed schedule of infrastructure improvements. It is not the responsibility of development to solve existing problems on the network, but only solve the problems that itself will cause. And I think that's an important message for residents. But that doesn't take away from the fact that there is further development planned in the Northampton area, which we will have to test and see if those impacts can be satisfactorily mitigated as we go forward in the process, and feed that information back to residents as part of the process.
Thanks for that. Being aware of the time and that this consultation will go on, I think there's three councillors I've got so far. I want to talk four, and then can we just draw to an end there and we'll move on. So, Councillor Parton.
Thank you. I've long been an opponent of the view of 5.55 that halls of residence and purpose-built student accommodation are not included within calculations for ratio thresholds of when considering HMO applications. And whilst this draft paragraph does go some way to alleviate the issues, the second half of the sentence, it's my contest that it should actually say that they should actually be part of the decision-making process at all times and actually be included in the calculations. And it's something I've submitted because for people that live for a development, for example, on the Pennine House site, it's hardly going to be an issue. However, if you live on Ashby Road or Forest Road, this has come to the fore on quite a few occasions and will do in the future. So that it's my request, and it has been, that this is actually refined before the final version.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Again, obviously this is a consultation period, so we welcome all the comments that we're having tonight and that we may receive over the next week. Just in terms of a response to that, it's a practicality issue, really, is if we're drawing a 100 metre radius, which is the new approach that we've been using since the housing supplementary planning document came into place, that very rarely will capture a whole halls of residence or a whole purpose-built student accommodation. And then to work out what proportion of that halls of residence or purpose-built should be included becomes very problematic. And actually, if the entrance to that student block of, say, 100 students is within the 100 metre radius, or it's or the route those students will take to universities in that radius, that's probably more important than the fact that five or six of the bedrooms fell into the radius. So we use it when we're making a decision. The case officer will look at not only the threshold, but also the other factors. And so it's on the list there that halls of residence purpose built will not be included, but they will be recorded. And that means when the threshold's assessed, that will be picked out, and then the case officer will look at that that issue as a sort of secondary factor that needs to be taken into account in decision making. And that's been working reasonably well, I think, in planning decisions. But I do take the point, and it's something again we can have another look at through the consultation.
Thanks for that. I think we've got three final questions, so if we can brief, please, it's Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Councillor Tillotson. About HMOs, initially I really welcomed the introduction of the proposed 10%, but having given it some thought, I believe actually the time has come to draw a line in Loughborough and say that we will have no more family homes in Loughborough that are converted into HMOs. Yeah. I think that would be a much simpler, much easier to operate, and it would give residents some peace of mind.
through you, Chair. Thank you for that. It'd make our lives easier as well. Unfortunately, we've got to evidence what we're doing. So there's got to be evidence that no further student properties in Loughborough would be acceptable and there would be an impact. And that's the issue. So we use the threshold as to demonstrate where there's been a tipping point in the community where one part, of the, one section of the community has become too dominant. And that's the basis for the policy, and that's what we have to use. We have to use that evidence, and we have to evidence each decision. So each decision has to be made on its own merits, and that's the planning system that we work with.
If I can just come back, I mean, I'm not suggesting no more student accommodation. I'm saying no more conversion of family homes into student accommodation. So we know, we were in previous parts of tonight's meeting, we've had conversations about the large number of purpose-built student accommodations and our concerns that there are going to be empty rooms in those accommodations, and yet we're also going to allow more family homes to be converted into student accommodations. So I think that would be your evidence, really, the large number of purpose-built accommodations which are probably more fit for purpose than a family home is.
Through your chair, the evidence that we've gathered, and we have undertaken some more recent evidence, so we had the work from Professor Smith from the university, but then we've had more recent evidence which we've used to inform the approach we've set out in the draft local plan, actually suggests that houses and multiple occupation are being used by quite a variety of people. And only about half of them are students. So there's a huge need within the community. It's part of the housing market. It's how people find a home. So to stop that completely, we would have to evidence, and we don't have the evidence to suggest that's necessary.
Did I, just going back a bit, did I understand Councillor Smidovich to say that Nottingham have actually done that already?
I've been told that there's parts of Nottingham that's happened. They've absolutely said no more student housing.
So perhaps we could research how they decided that was appropriate for Nottingham.
In effect, that's what the threshold approach does. So we're saying that if it's gone over the threshold, there would have to be exceptional circumstances that we would allow it. So it could be an interpretation of the same policy that we're using in
if it was 5%, it would be, why it has to be 10, I mean, we were the first to introduce, sorry Chair, I shouldn't have interrupted you there, but we were the first to introduce 20% way back before my time, and other people have leapfrogged and gone way down to 5%, and now we're hearing 0%.
Okay, it's been an emotive topic.
Councillor Mercer, can I ask then, I know the law is slightly different, but how have some Scottish councils managed to find the evidence to do it in university towns if we can't?
Through you, Chair. The law is very different in Scotland.
But the evidence isn't.
Well, yeah, but the law is very, very different. I don't think we have time to review the Scottish Town and Country Planning Act, although for my sins I did once work in Scotland, in Aberdeen, albeit 25 years ago, but my memory doesn't stretch that far back, but there are notable differences between the two systems.
Can you very brief
something? I will be very brief. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Councillor Forrest. We're going round and round with this discussion. I endorse everything that Councillor Tillotson has said, and I'm all in favour of the 10% of, you know, multiple occupation sites in Storrow. There's a recent inspector's appeal made nonsense of the 10%, and it highlights once again, with respect, we don't have a coherent student accommodation policy. We're doing it piecemeal. And before we are going to really get any further and deal with this problem properly, we have to have a coherent student housing accommodation strategy. Somebody needs to tell me how we do it. I'm happy to sit on any panel you like that will deal with this, but it won't be the first one. We have had panels who have come up with proposals, they've never been implemented. We can't go round in circles like this, not with this new draft plan in front of us. It's time we dealt with this matter.
Just clarified, Chair.
Sorry.
This issue about previous scrutiny student panels' recommendations not being implemented, Cabinet and Scrutiny Commission both confirmed that every single recommendation was satisfactorily implemented.
Okay, right, so this is clearly a very emotive subject that's not going to go away anytime soon, so if I can draw an end to it here, this is going to be revisited, I'm quite sure, on many occasions too. So, painfully aware, I'm trying to keep it before 8 o'clock when we finish this meeting. There's two quick questions, and can I then move on to another topic? I think it's Councillor.
Yes, just very quickly. I was on the first committee, the SPD, where it took ages, and Dave was the chair of it, if I remember, Dave. It took a long time to come to this conclusion about this 20%. I was shocked recently that I thought 20% was in a street. In fact, it isn't. It took me time, and I've only just worked this out, and that was 20 years ago, Dave. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. So it's Councillor May, then Councillor Brennan, I think, then we'll move on. So very quickly.
Okay, yeah, just thanks. I'd like to feed through this committee back into the consultation, and I wanted to pick up where Councillor Parsons has left off, is that we've been asked to take another 2,000 homes in Loughborough, and frankly don't see the need in the local plan for us to do that, because we've got the West of Loughborough Sue, which is about 4,500 houses, 3,500 houses potentially, so that's still to be built and developed. And then another 2,000 here, so potentially 5,500 to 6,500 houses by the time we finish. But none of the infrastructure in Loughborough is being upgraded. And you don't have to travel up Uphill Way, or try to travel up Uphill Way in the mornings or during rush hour. That's gridlock, and all the side roads are gridlock. In our patches, myself and Christine's patches, Belton Road, by the train station area, it's all gridlock at rush hour. Sometimes it takes half an hour to get from my house to the council offices, and it's only a mile.
Yeah.
So times that by X amount of population increase, and I think that's what we have to feed back to say, actually, if we are being asked to take these extra 2,000 houses, then infrastructure development has to go hand in hand. And at the moment, I don't see that. But the second thing is, and the most interesting thing is, that I think some councillors, not maybe all, around this say we've got mail shotted by a developer previous to the last election regarding a development potentially in Coates and Houghton, which is Jelson, you know, I'll say it there, who are developing the Birstall roadside, Birstall site, coming to an end at that line, and they want to build there. Track record of building and delivery. So why wouldn't we explore that? You know, why wouldn't we explore towards the east of the borough? Because if you look at this map that's been circulated, to the east of the borough, hardly any development is taking place. And sometimes we've got to bite the bullet and say, wherever we are and all our centres are now bursting at the seam, let's look at another new proposal elsewhere in the borough and support that and make that sustainable and develop that going forward. And that's a scheme of 4,500, 5,000, maybe 6,000 houses that they're proposing there. And that will take a lot of the slack, not just in Loughborough, but also in Shepshed and also all of our surrounding villages as well. And if that proposal were to be given oxygen and time to breathe, I think that could be a very successful proposal for the borough.
For you, Chair, so the Coates proposal is for 1,000 homes, and it is one of the options that we've considered, a new settlement as part of their strategy. So the document that we've been consulting on deals with three key questions, really, outside of the topic areas. What scale of growth should we be planning for? And we've gone for a low scale of growth, but with an element of flexibility to try and ensure that we maintain a five-year supply. We've looked at distribution, and we looked at new settlements, we looked at urban concentration, we looked at dispersal. And what we've gone for is an urban concentration with actually a focus on urban intensification in Loughborough, so looking to put more development within the urban area as opposed to on the edge of the urban area. But we did look at options for greater growth in Loughborough, and we looked at options for lower growth in Loughborough, and that's where we got to in terms of the appraisal of the options. And then we looked at the new settlement. Now, of the options that we appraised in the lead up to this consultation, that came out as the least, the poorest performing through the sustainability appraisal. And obviously that's been used to inform our approach. But that sustainability appraisal and all of the evidence that went into assessing this, the distribution options, is available as part of this consultation. It's part of what we're asking people to have a look at. And then finally, having identified a strategy, we then looked at the sites and identified sites to build up that strategy. And that's what led us to the sites that have been mentioned tonight on the edge of Loughborough, but also all of those sites within the urban area. So I suppose this is a consultation. This is we're partway through the process. We're asking the question, have we asked the right questions? Have we assessed things in the appropriate way? Have we prioritised the right things? Because with sustainability appraisal, there's an awful lot of factors that are looked at, and obviously we have to look at what we think are the local priorities for Charnwood and the local priorities for Loughborough. So that's what we've tried to do, but again, all of that has been part of the consultation, asking people to give us our views. Just why I've got the floor, just to mention that the consultation obviously ended on the 16th of December, and officers are busy trying to look through the responses, organise them and respond to them, and we're looking to try and publish a statement of consultation as soon as possible. Ideally by the end of January, although we had a lot of responses, so that might be challenging. So I just ask the committee to get comments to us as soon as possible, ideally in the next week, so that they can be fed into that process and form part of our thinking for the next stage.
Okay, thank you for that. Final question from Councillor Brennan.
Councillor Bolton and I have responded via email during the consultation period. I just wanted to say a word about social housing and affordable housing. There's obviously quite a large need that's been identified for that type of housing, 6,528 homes over the plan period. I am quite concerned that once smaller developments are excluded, once shelter developments are excluded, and given the inevitable wriggle that that developers will try to use even after the planning's been granted, that it will be quite difficult to meet that demand. Also, that within the current definitions of affordable homes, that being 80% of the market rent, that they still won't be affordable to some of the people who need it the most. It does. You've mentioned in paragraph 5.22 that you've tried to take account of viability to ensure that schemes are not undeliverable. I do think that there's room to be quite strident and quite ambitious there, because, you know, we've got some very large developers making an awful lot of money in Charnwood, and I don't think that they're going to go away because we're a little bit with them. And I do think as well, something that's not, my apologies if it is and I've missed it, but isn't greatly addressed in the report, is the council could be building some more houses. You know, it's a low risk investment. You're going to get people to live in council houses, and the vast majority of them are going to pay their rent. So it's not something that is going to be a huge drain in the long term on council resources. In fact, it's going to increase council resources. And, you know, councils are doing it. Norwich City Council is doing it. Preston is doing it. I think that we could do it too.
Thank you. I don't disagree with a lot of what you said there, but what I would say in respect to council house building, the council doesn't own very much land at all. It has done some building in recent years, and I suspect that there may be a desire to do more, but given that we're not a major landowner, it makes it very difficult to see that objective through.
Okay, thank you for that. I think we can draw this item to a close. I say we will be revisited. You have the opportunity to comment very quickly. If you have any further comments, to submit them. And then, with the ambition of trying to finish before 8 o'clock, we move quickly on to item 9, which is allotment security.
Chair. If it helps, I'm quite happy to take the as read, or if you'd like me to do an introduction, I'm quite happy either way, but it's quite a short report and members have read it. I'm just quite happy to.
Yeah. Move, you're happy to move straight to questions then? Yeah. Okay. Any questions? Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Councillor Forrest. Mr. Bradford, thank you very much for this report. I enjoyed reading it. I thought it was very comprehensive, very interesting. I do have one or two questions, if you'll indulge me, Chair. I'll get through them as quickly as I can. I note on page 161 that officers have requested that £35,000 is added to the capital programme starting in April for general allotment improvements. Some of this will be spent on improved fencing and gates. I'm delighted to hear that you are requesting this, and I do hope that we are going to see this request is made, because this is an area that does require some investment. Page 163, and I will also to say you go very much into the issue of security and thefts from these sites. I have to tell you, I believe that there were thefts from at least two of the sites over the Christmas holidays. One was in my ward, and I believe it was a theft of crops, you know, mm-hmm. potatoes and carrots. Anyway, that's beside the point. Gates on the Alan Moss Road allotment made of mesh would be easy to cut through with pliers, although this has never occurred. But that doesn't mean that it won't, so perhaps that could go on your list of things you're going to spend £35,000. And the other thing is on page 167, you talk about padlocks for the Great Central Road allotment. These talk about the padlocks. So these padlocks will soon be replaced by good quality combination padlocks. And I take it these are padlocks that you have to sort of key in numbers to. I do understand from allotment holders on this site that the problem with that in the past is that those combination numbers have been passed on to other people. And I wondered if you could remind allotment holders to keep these numbers confidential, or we're just going to go around in circles.
Can I come back on that point?
Yes, certainly.
If you don't mind. It's always a bit of a balance between issuing key locks and issuing combination locks with a key. You have allotment holders that leave, keep the key, don't return it, or get duplicates cut, and then you've got no way of changing that without changing the lock. And they're not cheap. They're not locks that you buy from Wilco. They're quite expensive, heavy duty ones. With the combination ones, we can change the combination. And write to allotment holders, and then we can keep changing them periodically to prevent anyone that's previously had an allotment from accessing the site, or anyone that's got access to the code that shouldn't have from getting in there.
Yeah. I don't know why they would cut duplicate keys and hand them out to all the country and then complain about that. Anyway, that's beside the point. And what I would like also to say again, thank you for the report. I should explain, I don't have an allotment. I'm not an allotment holder. I'm not entirely sure how I've been looked into this, except I have an allotment in my ward. But I seem to have become the allotment champion. I'm very sorry about this. But you are going to get this some money, I'm sure. I wonder, Mr. Chair, could I ask that perhaps in 9 months' time we could have another report from Matt about what improvements have been made to the allotments.
Yeah,
would that be appropriate? Yeah.
Thank you.
And I've said all I need to say on it, so right. I'm happy for anybody else to comment.
And Councillor Tillotson,
I'll be very brief. I was going to ask about the the preference of keys over combinations. And yeah, I think Matt's covered the issues with both, so I won't linger on that. I think we need to make sure that all the padlocks are high quality, sturdy padlocks. And just to say, I noticed you mentioned the badger set. I mean, my daughter fell victim to the vandal that was a badger.
There are obviously we do have wildlife on some of the sites, which is great, but it's not very good for the crops sometimes. No. And people spend a lot of hours down there tending to their crops for them to be eaten by creatures coming out at night.
Right, thanks for that. Being aware that. We'll have another report in 9 months' time. Can we then move on to the final subject?
I don't in there the reference to creating a sort of allotment for orchards on each site. Just as a thought, would you be prepared to accept a single body looking after all of them? Because it must be much easier for us as a council and more efficient to deal with one body than 10.
I guess we'd have to consider each proposal as it came forward. I know that some years ago we wrote to allotment holders on a number of sites. It predates my employment at the council, so I'm not exactly sure of the date, asking if they wanted to form allotment associations and govern themselves and collect their own income and work that way. And we didn't get any take-up whatsoever. It is something that we could... look into if allotment holders wanted to form an association, as works in other areas where they could manage their own tenants, security, income, set their own charges and become more independent from the council. We could consider those. But we have tried in the past and as I say, we didn't get any take up on that proposal.
Yeah. Does work successfully in other areas.
Okay, thank you for that. So we can then move on to the final item, the Bedford Square Gateway project.
With an eye on the clock, Chair, and take it from Matthew's book, can I take the report as read and happy to deal with any questions you may have?
Excellent. I suppose if you were happy with that. Then any questions? Any questions for people happy with the report? Clearly people are happy with the report.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let them not know if they're going with the
advice. What I'll say is it's an extremely exciting development that's been worked hard and altered many times, and crucially it's kept the amount of parking. And another interesting aspect is that this, when it goes to the consultation, you'll see that there's a wealth of evidence backed up from other parts of the country where similar schemes have happened and footfall has increased. So we're going to get increased footfall, more aesthetically pleasing, lower car speeds, and yet we retain the amount of parking. So I think people will be incredibly excited.
Okay. So thank you very much. So that's it. We can move to just note the dates of the next meeting, the 18th March, 17th of June. And all I would like to say is apologise for going slightly beyond 8 o'clock to the officers for the first day back. This is the first substantive meeting for councillors who are obviously in that. The Christmas period brought up a series of concerns. This is the first opportunity for them to be expressed. So, thank you very much.
Okay.